Arenado.
This is Brock and Song.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Buehr has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Song, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Tom Wassel's in for Brock today. Good morning, Tom.
Tom Wassel. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, and it's good to have you here. Everyone should be happy. It was a wonderful day again yesterday as the Mariners win 5 straight, 7-2 since Robinson Cano went out with the suspension. They're more than 10% of their way through the suspension, and they're 7-2.
You're not drawing the conclusion that they're better without him. I know you're not.
I'm drawing the conclusion that good for them. They've taken a difficult situation and found a way to persevere, and also they've played a bunch of lousy teams.
Yeah, they've got a million things going right that I don't think we would have expected. They've had guys who are hurt. They've had no Cano in the lineup. They've actually gotten good pitching from the rotation. Not great pitching, but good. They've gotten deep into games, maybe they've allowed some runs or the bullpen's come through. I think the biggest difference in all of this is Edwin Diaz. And it's tough to credit a guy for a win streak when he doesn't pitch in 8 of the 9 innings or he's not active in 8 of the 9 innings of all these games. But they're all one-run wins. Without him, you're losing at least 2 of these games. And he's the difference between 7-2 and 5-4.
The next offer on the way, swing and a miss, strike 3. Sugar with a save. How sweet it is. And the Mariners shut out the Oakland A's tonight here in Oakland. A final score of 1-0.
I'll agree with all that, Tom, and I'll say this. I think as good as Diaz has been during that stretch, he was at his best last night. Last night was about as good as I think I can remember him being. He threw one bad pitch. He hung a slider, and it didn't seem to matter, and he came right back after it, threw another one. I mean, he's been tremendous, and the at-bat that Lowry had I thought was about as good as you'll see from Diaz. He starts him off with a slider for a strike, then a fastball for a strike. Now he's 0-2, and he goes back foot slider, which was taken for a ball. Then he went tried to go away with the slider back door. That was taken for a ball. And then he went back to a third one to the back foot for the strike. He was dominant, you're right. And I will admit, of all the things last night, it's another 1-0 win, and Marco was great, and we may get a chance to talk to him this morning at 9:30. I'll admit I got a little choked up afterwards seeing Andreoli's dad watching. Yeah, I did. I didn't mean to. I don't know. So
you got choked up? Why? Because he had a hit and a catch?
No.
Catch?
So first of all, I had no idea who John Andreoli was yesterday. I'll admit they called up Andreoli instead of Jason Wirth. I didn't really remember him from spring training. I had to kind of look it up and ask a few people like, who's Andreoli again? Like, what's that guy do? And basically, he's a fast 4A player. Mm-hmm. That's sort of who he is. He's really fast. He plays some good D. He's not a great hitter. He's a 4A player. But he comes up with a base hit early in the game. He comes up with an amazing catch, I thought, in the eighth inning, on a ball that looked to be a double.
The 3-2 to Lucroy on the way, swinging a fly ball into the gap in right center field. Andreoli on the run. Dive, slides, and he makes the catch. John Andreoli, holy smokes, the rookie, his major league debut tonight, way over into the gap in right center field, robbing Jonathan Lucroy of an extra base hit. His mom and dad here at the ballpark tonight. What a catch by Andreoli off to the races at the last second, diving, sliding, and he comes up with it. One away for the A's here in the bottom of the eighth, and there's your play of the game defensively.
All right, it wasn't that. That's not what made me get choked.
It wasn't that moment?
No, although that was great. I thought that was awesome. It was watching Brad Adam interview him after the game, and they had the shot over of his dad. It was the shot of his dad watching
using the
him.
Old digital camera?
Yes.
The actual camera?
Yes, and and watching his kid being interviewed post-game. And his dad was just, like, brimming with pride. He looked so unbelievably proud in that moment. Like, he was looking around like, "Who is everyone seeing what's going on down here? My kid's being interviewed after a major league game." I thought that was great.
I posted it on my Twitter if you want to go look at it. It's a picture. I was like, this is a picture of him taking a picture of Andreoli. It's amazing.
Oh,
I love
that's
it.
Awesome. Yeah, I thought that was a moment that kind of got me, Tom. And they don't always, and I'm not always a sucker for those things.
Sometimes it just depends on the mood you're in. Right, I mean, it's not objectively that it's going to make you cry every time or make you shed a tear. If you're in the mood because they happen to win and you're just looking forward to hosting the show with me the next
could
day,
be.
Then I can understand
is
you getting
it,
a little
is it
emotional.
Possible I was extra emotional yesterday, Cecily's fourth birthday, and I was celebrating with her earlier in the night. So maybe
sure,
was,
you're a parent. I get it.
I was predisposed to feeling proud on a day like yesterday, but I thought that was pretty cool. So kudos to the entire Andreoli family from Shrewsbury, Mass. Where he went to St. John's.
That's what it is.
You think it was just a Shrewsbury thing?
Yes, because you just wanted to come in here and say Shrewsbury over and over and over. It's Shrewsbury.
It's not Shrewsbury. It's Shrewsbury.
Simsbury, Middlebury, Shrewsbury, right, Sudbury.
But it's Shrewsbury.
Bury.
That's how it's pronounced.
Okay.
It's just Shrewsbury. Anyway, how long can this go? How long? I mean, it's bizarre watching this team, and guys that you don't expect are pitching better than they're supposed to. Marco is not supposed to go seven innings with no runs. Wade LeBlanc is not supposed to go five innings with no runs every single time out. You're not supposed to get the kind of pitching performances that they have, and yet they're just finding ways to win each one of these games despite an offense right now that I think you'd have to say is sputtering.
Probably not that much longer. If we're being, 'cause I felt as great about the win last night or this series of wins as I have at any point, but it makes me think back to last year. Remember when they had to go to Christian Bergman and Sam Gaviria over and over and over? And they're actually giving you a handful of good starts here and there. We were asking that same question. How long can this go on? Because it had to go on for like 6 weeks, and it didn't. So the realistic part of my brain says, you know what? At some point, they're gonna be at least 500 for about a month or something like that.
It's crazy, though, to get back to 500. I mean, you're 10 games over right now.
They're not killing these teams, though. They're winning 3-2, 1-0. Even the high-scoring games are 9-8. They've done that a couple of times. Again, I think having Diaz pitching the way he is makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah.
Even if Ocasio had given up the lead and Andreoli hadn't caught that ball, maybe they would have scored one more run and Diaz would have come. But at the same time, can it all work together like that for the rest of the year?
Yeah, it seems hard to imagine. And I'll keep saying, I think there's some moves that are going to have to be coming, and they're going to be pitching moves. I know it's the offense that isn't doing its job entirely right now as you get another 1-0 victory, but you're going to get Haniger back, and eventually you're going to get Cano back, and you're going to get D. Gordon back, and eventually you're going to actually see, I think, some of these guys that aren't hitting start to hit a little bit. I mean, I would assume Kyle Seager's not going to hit 220 for the rest of the year. I mean, he's been sort of your biggest challenge right there in the middle of your lineup. So I assume that the bats are going to continue to be, or are eventually going to be okay. It's hard to look at some of the track records of the pitchers on this team and say they're going to be great for the entire season. And it's hard to keep watching. Nicasio was terrible yesterday. And yet he manages to sneak through because he gets a great defensive play from Andreoli, arguably an even better defensive play from Mike Zunino throwing the guy out. That was a ridiculous throw from Zunino yesterday, and then finally you get a strikeout to end the inning. But you can't have your eighth inning look like that. That's not a recipe for long-term success in Major League Baseball in 2018. So,
and by the way, with Nicasio, let's remember, if you go through his game log, most of it looks pretty darn good. Every single time he comes out of the bullpen, I think, all right, should I be confident? I look up his game log, I should be pretty confident.
Are you ever, though?
Here's the thing you got to remember. With a setup guy, with a closer, if he's great, even 65-70% of the time, that's
true.
Not enough.
True.
It's not enough. You need to be great all the time.
Well,
otherwise, the eighth inning is a big question.
Is he pitching the eighth inning for you?
For now.
He is?
Yeah, he is.
I'll tell you what, Ryan Cook was up.
Sounds really defeated in that admission.
Ryan Cook was up in the seventh in case they were going to need him in the seventh. I think I would have pitched Cook in the eighth last night.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing.
I was thinking the same thing on Cook in the
eighth. Especially because he'd been up, because, you know, dealing with the injuries he's had and stuff, and you're trying to, you know, you're working him back in slowly. I think I would have thrown him right out in there.
But he's been, Nicasio's been just good enough where Service doesn't want to give up on his player. He doesn't want to send that message. That's never a thing that a manager is going to want to do, is replace a guy just out of nowhere like that.
Because he's also best friends with Eddie Diaz and a mentor to Eddie Diaz. So that's one of those the tangibles that you don't know about.
So you think it might ruin Diaz as well?
No,
it'd be
I'm
like
just
a nuclear
saying, I think
bomb
that means
going off
more
in that
than
bullpen.
You think, especially when you're out in the bullpen and you're isolated from Eddie. I think that means more than you think.
I think it's a very possible, and anything you can do to make sure that Edwin Diaz is as good as he's been, I think that's probably worth your time, because I'll agree with you, Tom. I think that's been a major, major factor in why they are where they are. We'll talk a little bit more about what I think is the biggest factor in this season being 10 games over 500, and that is the manager, Scott Service. We'll do that coming up this morning at 8 o'clock. Right now at 7:10, time for Need to Know.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
That's a really good win for the Mariners, who take their fifth straight last night, beat the A's 1-0. They're now 10 games over 500 at 29-19. Marco Gonzalez had a career night. Seven shutout innings, only allowed two hits in the process. Tons of ground ball outs, the occasional strikeout thrown in. He really was masterful against an A's lineup that is not that bad. Now, they're missing Chris Davis, which helps, but this is not the A's of the last couple of years. It's a good team that's been over 500 throughout the season. So, very impressive performance from Marco. Nice to see the Mariners win another series. They do it by winning the first two this time instead of having to wait until the final game of the series. Kudos to them.
Yeah, they've won 7 of 9. 6 of those wins have been one-run wins. I think somewhere along the line you have to credit Edwin Diaz entirely. He doesn't appear in 8 of the 9 innings played in any of these games, obviously, as the closer, but I feel like in past years, they would have lost at least 2 of those games. He's the difference between them being 7-2 and 5-4. And also, we've seen timely hitting. We've seen comebacks. There is something that's intangibly different about this team from last year. Maybe these guys playing together last year through all those injuries, through all those disappointing losses, maybe there's something to that. Guys like Segura and Haniger haven't been through it. They've got the ability to come back, and different guys are stepping up all the time.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, the NFL has officially made a new policy on the national anthem. It'll give players the option of whether they want to be out on the field or not. They can remain in the locker room. However, if they do come out and then protest the anthem by kneeling in some fashion, the team will be fined, not necessarily the player. The team can then choose whether or not to pass that fine on to the players or not. I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of time thinking about this yesterday. Personally, and I know a lot of people will disagree, personally, I think it's a reasonable compromise. That being said, I still think the NFL handled this horribly. And the biggest reason why is that they tried to do it unilaterally without discussing it with the players. I don't understand what would give them the idea that that is a good plan, especially in 2018. And this isn't just because of the fact that the players have a collective bargaining agreement and they're a well-organized, egotistical group as well. It has everything to do with just managing people in this day and age. Good luck trying to tell everybody what to do. It just doesn't work that way anymore. You need buy-in. You need your employees to buy in. And I'm really surprised that on an issue as big as this one, the NFL didn't make a better attempt to discuss it and work it out with the players instead of telling them what to do.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a reasonable compromise, but at the same time, it definitely doesn't solve the problem. The media that's up in the press box is still going to give us a head count of who's out there saluting and who isn't, who's back in the locker room. Plus, like you said, they could have worked with the players in some fashion. They didn't need to make a million concessions. But like Groz said yesterday, they could have exchanged no protesting for dumping, say, $90 or $100 million into some kind of social justice cause or something like that. They could have included the players in some fashion. However, the one thing I think should be gone, and it won't be 100%, but for the most part should be gone, is the image of guys actually kneeling. I think from the fan standpoint, there's a difference between a guy not being out there at all and actually seeing a player out there protesting, whether it's a raised fist or kneeling. I think that that image is very powerful. Think about Colin Kaepernick. Every single time there's a story written about him, what's attached in the article? A picture of him sitting there kneeling. So I think that the goal of getting that erased from the situation should help.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
A couple Mariners notes here. Nelson Cruz returned to the lineup yesterday. Didn't look particularly great, but give him credit for trying to get himself back in there. Mitch Haniger says that he expects to play today after also being hit in the hand. It was great to see John Andreoli yesterday making his first career start and getting his first career hit in the major leagues. Honestly, it was awesome just seeing his dad and how proud he was. We'll see Felix Hernandez back on the mound today. Mariners' fifth starter, Felix Hernandez. That's honestly what it looks like right now. 12:25 or 12:35 first pitch from Oakland. And yeah, this kind of flies under the radar, and I guess it's sort of one of those no news is good news deals, but the Mariners signed a 25-year lease to remain at Safeco Field. Not that they were going to go anywhere else, but good to see that there won't be any sort of stadium fight in their future.
It's funny how quickly things can change, especially for a pitcher. I thought for about the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, although Felix wasn't great, he was still showing that kind of confidence that he had 6, 7 years ago, even 4 years ago. On the mound, even though, he wasn't great, but he was their most consistent starter. And that's kind of gone out the window the last couple of starts. He really just hasn't been all that great. The other thing I'll say is Haniger being back, He and Segura, I think, are the two hitters in the lineup that are the most indispensable right now. And I'll even say that I think Haniger has a bigger upside at this point than Segura, but Segura is their most important hitter right now. He just doesn't slump. He just doesn't slump, and he seems to be up there in the clutch with runners on every time, and he usually comes through.
It's not easy being the hitting machine. That's what he said. It's just not easy being a hit machine, but he can do it. He gets it done. Said that on Danny David Moore on Friday afternoon. Great interview with Gene Segura. We're hoping to talk to Marco Gonzalez this morning around 9:30, as those are three things you need to know every day at 7:10. Good to have Wassel in hanging out.
It's tough to be a hitting machine.
See?
You know.
It's not easy, Tom. Not everybody can do it. Gene's sort of unique. Thankfully, his name happens to rhyme with machine, or else it would be even harder for him.
I still wish it was Jean.
Let's talk to the hitting machine. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, so the NFL came out with its new policy yesterday. Question for you. Did they ever think about, I don't know, maybe talking to the players about it first?
They talked once, and of course, that conversation didn't go too well, because if you go back into the fall, they had a conversation with the players, talked about it, and they told the players they weren't going to change the rule. So what did they do? They came to the owners' meeting, and they changed the rule. And they changed the rule, so now players can get fined, at least by teams, not the league, and that could be all over the board as far as what the fine can be if they go out and show disrespect to the flag. So, no, they should have. But they did not, and the players are upset about it.
So here's my question, because it, and I know I'm in the minority. I actually think it seems like a decent compromise. I don't think either side is really winning in this. But if you are one of the teams that is going to choose to be hardline on this, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you're the Houston Texans, and you are going to take a really hard stance, and any player that either doesn't come out there or protests in some way, you are going to fine heavily. Are players going to just not play there?
They could elect not to if they find it's a team that's going to be a little bit too strict on that. But, you know, getting all the players to agree to a lot of different things is not the easiest
thing
in the world.
Not all, but if a bunch of players just said, yeah, cool, I'm not playing in Houston, good luck with that. And if you draft me, I'm not going to play there. I'll hold out until you trade me. And if I'm on the team, I'm not going to play. And if, you know, forget it. And I'm definitely not going to sign there as a free agent. Would that end up putting as much pressure on some of these owners as anything else?
I don't know if it would put enough pressure on, but it would put some pressure, but probably not enough to do this. Again, I think this is a weak compromise. I mean, it's not the worst. I mean, the worst would have been taking the 15-yard penalty if guys are on the field and ordering everybody to be on the field. That would have been the worst. But this still is, I think, a very weak compromise in the sense that it still puts players in a very difficult position when the easiest thing to do was just take players out of the equation and end this debate. I mean, so that, you know, there's respect and not disrespect, because now you have more players trying to talk about, well, maybe we should ban together and we'll have this portion of the team not go out. Maybe we'll do this week, you know, before, where, you know, this might have been a little bit, you know, less players would have been involved. Now I think more players potentially can be involved, and that's where this thing is now going to continue. Now what happens? We get to the season, we get to the games, and now we have to watch each week, okay, who's there, who's not there, have to do head counts, and then after the game, go to those players, why didn't you go, and it just sticks around. And of course, some players are trying to figure out, is there a way to go out and show some kind of a display while you're out in the field? So no, not good.
John, Jed York of the 49ers basically recused himself from the whole thing, and Christopher Johnson of the Jets said he'd take care of the fines for the players. Are there more dissenting owners among this group than maybe we think?
Not a majority, but I think that everybody's not on the same page. It was funny, they make the announcement, it was unanimous, and Jed York said, well, I did not vote for it, I basically abstained, and so it wasn't completely unanimous. And of course, you saw that Chris Johnson did take the position, it's like, okay, if my guys go out and do it, I'll back them up. So, because again, there was a contingent that was starting to grow. That's what I was kind of optimistic the other night, when you saw there was a group of owners really thinking about just taking the players back to what was before 2010 and just have them in the locker room during the national anthem. But the other owners started to say, well, let's do this, let's compromise this, and this is the result that you get.
It'll be interesting to see how this goes now, that's for sure. I don't think the issue is going to go away, certainly, just because the owners came out with a new policy. So it'll be kind of another thing to watch as we head into this NFL season. Did you see this Richie Incognito story yesterday?
Uh-huh.
So very strange. Being held for involuntary psychological evaluation after throwing a weight at somebody in a gym. Is Richie ever going to make it back to the NFL?
Well, I mean, you have to kind of wonder, because if you look at the last month, I mean, things have been weird. First, he redoes his contract, taking a little bit less money and getting $1 million signing bonus, which obviously puts him in the position, if he retires, to have to pay that back. Then he comes back and he retires, saying that he has kidney issues and all these different problems with his health. And then a couple days later, he jokes around and says, "Oh, I think I'll be at your off-season program." And they were saying, "What is that?" So then he comes back and he wants to play. Now he's working out. He throws a tennis ball at somebody in the gym. Then he throws a dumbbell at somebody in the gym. And so they basically hold him over. So I have to think that there must be something wrong. We don't know what the results of what they're doing as far as his studies and all that stuff. But I mean, something is not right. And I think that's going to really, number one, put him in a position where nobody's going to offer more than the minimum. And knowing the amount of money he's going to owe, I think it puts him in a position he may not play again.
The Arizona Cardinals haven't ruled out that Josh Rosen could start week one. What do you think the chances of him doing that are?
Not good. I still think, you paid $20 million for Sam Bradford and all of what is this going to be? I mean, think about this. I mean, the Bears took the rightful criticism of paying $15 million for Mike Glennon and then dumping him after 5-6 starts and going over to Mitch Trubisky. Can you imagine paying $20 million for Sam Bradford, $4 million a year for Mike Glennon, and then go straight to Sam Rosen, to Josh Rosen? That would be bad.
They should go to Sam Rosen.
That would be even better.
See, I think right now Sam Rosen probably has a better chance than Josh Rosen.
Wild card time, John.
Time now for the wild card. Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
You are a world traveler. You are at the owners' meetings this week. What is your number one pet peeve about airline travel?
It's like the seat back thing, because, when you're pulling your seat back, it's like people saying, well, you shouldn't do that. Well, if that shouldn't happen, then they shouldn't have the seats moved back. I think probably the number one pet peeve is when you're in a row, let's say you're in row 11 or 12, and somebody from row 14 and 15, as you're getting out of the plane, wants to jump ahead of you.
That drives
me crazy.
I'm with you. John, you and I see both of those things exactly alike.
Who complains about putting the seat
I've
back?
I've never actually heard anybody do
I've
that,
heard a
but
lot
I've
of people.
I've seen things on the internet about it where people get upset and they try to like block you with their knees.
Yeah, block you with their knees or hit you with the tray in the back. Take the tray and start banging against you.
They shouldn't make it back. Like, if that's the case, they shouldn't give it the option of reclining.
I will say I'm always intimidated to do it because I'm worried I'll upset someone.
Yeah, but I'm not worried at all. Well, I may upset someone, but I'm not worried. It's like, hey, if that's the problem, have them go fix the plane.
I totally agree with you, John. Totally agree. And what is the rush? What is the rush to get on or off the plane? Like, calm down. You have to start jumping.
I can understand it if, like, let's say that the flight gets in like 40 minutes late or 30 minutes late and you're trying to make a connection. That I can understand.
Yeah.
But let's say now most of the flights, the way that they schedule the time, I mean, you tend to land like about 20 minutes before the scheduled time because they overestimate it. And because of that, it's like, hey, why, if you're in 15, why should you jump ahead of people? Be respectful of the people in the same row.
The Alaska does a great job with that. When they do end up, if they are ever late, they're really good if there are people with tight connections. They'll say, okay, we'd really like, we've got these five passengers, raise your hand, and everybody try to let them get out first. And I've been on planes where it works and like everyone's really nice and respectful. Mm-hmm. And there's a really great teamwork moment. Kind of gives you some hope for the future of society. Thanks, John. We love you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
There you go. John Clayton with us every single day, of course, at 7:15. His show starts at 10, and then you can hear him with Danny, Dave, and more every day at 4:00. Tom, you are going to be with us for something that we've started recently.
I love this.
This is new and it's right up your alley, and I'm always excited about it. The answers don't matter, but the questions are fun. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, Wassel's in for Brock. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. We've got Mariners tickets we'll give away probably around between 8 and 8:30. So if you want to go to the big Sandlot game this weekend, we'll have tickets for you there. A nice win for them last night, and we'll talk some Scott Service coming up at 8 o'clock as well. So a lot going on. Brock will even join us here in 15 minutes for Coors Light's Blue 42. Tom, it's one of those days. Got a lot going on.
Love it.
Even despite having so many things going on, we have recently started doing something that has almost nothing to do with anything, and we're going to play with you right now. We call it Which Is Better. Very simple game, okay? I'm going to throw out two things. We all decide for ourselves. There doesn't have to be any unanimous consent here. Which is better? Got it?
Yes.
Do you understand the rules?
I'm right with you.
It's complicated. All right, which is better? Opening days or game sevens?
This is a good warm-up, because this is very obvious.
You think it's very obvious?
If you pick opening days, I don't want to know you. It's game seven in any sport. Even the NBA, which I'm at the point where I almost refuse to watch it. Right. I'll watch a game seven.
Really? Just because it's game seven?
Absolutely watch a game seven. Yeah, just the historical implications and so forth.
Do you like pressure or do you like pageantry?
Well, it's not just pageantry, though. It's hope. And that's the one thing that I think gives it a shot in this. You're right. I'm going to take game seven, and I'm willing to bet 95% of people will as well. But the argument I'm going to make is that I don't think the discrepancy is as big as you think. That I think opening days of any sport are filled with hope. It's the anticipation of seeing your team for the first time. Yeah, maybe you've seen them in spring training or training camp or whatever, depending on the sport. You kind of have a sense as to what they're going to be, but you're hopeful.
Name me one memorable opening day. Oh, outside of the NFL, because in opening day, it's not 16
games. It's not about the memories of it. It's about the feeling during opening day, and especially in baseball, knowing that the weather's about to change, spring is about to be there, and there's all the hope that comes with that.
No, in Seattle, the good weather doesn't come for another 2 months, so that doesn't even apply here.
Well, I don't think you're in the middle of... this year is not proving your point for you, Tom.
But most years it does.
Yeah, well... I'm like Jim Moore. I only look at what just happened. I'm only looking at right now, like Jim.
In game seven, you have that feeling and you have meaning. With opening days, you don't have any meaning.
Yeah.
Especially in the NBA or hockey. I mean, maybe baseball. I'm not going to compromise.
See?
Sorry.
I almost got you.
Which is better?
All right, you
game
ready?
Seven.
Which is better? A great goal or a great save?
The drop comes to Kuhn. It's moving in. Kakowski. Oh, and what a save! My goodness, what a save! By
Varlamov. Ovechkin
comes back, and he shot one that went wide.
That was the save of the playoffs.
Are we talking just hockey, or are we talking lacrosse, soccer?
I'm just talking hockey right now.
Lax.
We could end up talking about something else, but I think it starts with hockey.
I'm going to say save, actually. Because there's something about the nature of goal scoring that seems at times accidental to me.
And depending but we're not on talking about any goal. Talking about a great goal. Tic-tac-toe.
Yeah, but where do you draw the line?
Rick, I don't know.
Just think of the best goal you've ever seen and the best save you've ever
seen. I can't think of the best goal I've ever seen, other than maybe Dave Babich against the Rangers back in 94.
How about even some of them from this year? Between the legs, like just some of the amazing goals
been
that
some sick goals
scored this year.
I generally, when I'm thinking of a great goal, I think of that Rick Nash goal he scored when he was with Columbus, where he like dangles through five guys, and it's pretty sick.
I was going to say, because the best goal, a good save is one quick action.
Right.
A good goal can go from one end to the other. He splits the defenders, bring the puck across, go between the goalie legs.
True.
There could be a lot of buildup to that.
I mean, if we're talking Mighty Ducks here, the movie, it's
triple
obviously
D,
the triple
side.
D.
Right.
Flying V.
Yeah, right. Either of those would be fine.
Stall.
So what's your, Lydia, what's your answer? Great goal or a great save?
Yeah, I'm probably going great goal. Kyle convinced me. Kyle got me over. There's more moving parts. Mm. It builds more
If you're watching a highlight reel, it's going to be goals.
I'm going with Tom. I think it's a great save. I'm with you. Don't back down.
I'm not backing down. I'm saying if I want to watch a highlight reel, I'll go with the goals. But in the middle of a tight game, I might go save.
A great save is so awesome. When your goalie comes up with one that you don't think that they've got a shot at, either going post to post quickly or just like a real quick glove that you think is going to get behind them. Yeah, that's I'll go with a great save as well. Good debate, though. All right, speaking of which, and a lot of these were written last night while I was watching Game 7 between Tampa and Washington. Doc Emrick, who you just heard there on the call, or the field?
By Lundqvist, now Ponikarovsky with it. Through one in front, blocked there. Scramble for it there. They poke away at it. Still it's loose. Poked out by Covington. They score!
You want Doc Emmerich?
There's Doc Emmerich.
Or do you want the field?
I'll take the field.
Really?
And I love Doc Emmerich. But, I mean, you're talking the field?
All right, hold on.
In all sports?
I'm going to read to you. This was from one game. This was every synonym for pass that Doc Emmerich used in one game. Spirits it, slides it, fiddles it, rattles it, forks it, shovels it, chipped it, poked it, jammed it, ricochets it, knifed it, tripped it, skipped it, banks it, threw it, punched it, pushes it, flipped it, dragging it, soccered it, passed it, paddles it, fires it, blasted it, speared it, steered it. That's half. You want me to keep going?
It seems a little self-serving at this point. To Doc Emmerich, not to you. Like, Doc, we get it.
He's pretty impressive.
It's impressive. He's squibbed very, it, stashed very, it, very good.
Swiping it, forces it, handed it, bangs it. I don't know. Doc Emmerich might be the best.
I'm going the field, but it really is just one guy. It's this guy.
Into this second overtime. Gretzky had it, lost it. Yzerman picks it up. Yzerman moving. Blue line chance.
Oh! Gary Thorne.
Steve Yzerman!
Yeah. Gary Thorne.
Gary Thorne. Does he still do hockey games?
I don't think so. Every time I see him, though, I end up talking hockey with him.
How could you not?
Right. Well, because he does baseball games for a living.
For the Orioles.
Yeah, but every time I would see him, I would just talk hockey with him.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
When I think of the great hockey games of the 90s on ESPN, I think of Gary Thorne.
And they, by the way, have
Emmerich's great.
They have a little bit of a similarity to them, I think. Anyway, I like both, but...
There's kind of a natural cadence to the way hockey play-by-play goes.
Doc Emmerich's grown on me. I didn't used to like him. Now I think he's probably the greatest ever. All right. All right. Par 3 or par 5?
Well, part three you put money on. KP, who's closest to the pin.
Right.
Yeah, it's part
But par five's a scoring.
At our skill level, I'd go par five. If I was a pro, par three. You're trying to put that inches away from the cup.
You know
par
what,
five
though?
Is par a five, scoring I got room hole. For error.
You know what, though? As you approach the tee box for a par three, there's always a sense of relief. Like, oh cool, it's a par three.
Okay,
so I'm going to go with that.
As opposed to a sense of dread when you approach a par five sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this thing's 500 yards.
It's like we're
going to
be on this for the next half an hour.
If I don't hit that...
You can still shank a drive and recover and come back and score.
But there's nothing worse as an amateur kind of lousy golfer than you shank. Like you duff off the tee in a par five, and you're like, I still have 480 yards to go. This is awful.
You know what, though? You know how many times I've seen you duff out of the tee box, but then have a nice second shot?
Yeah, but how many times? Yeah, I don't know. You've also not seen me do the opposite, where you duff out of the tee box and then put the second shot in the water.
In the woods. Somehow I came out with bogey.
I'm going to say par three. I look forward more to a par three.
Yeah, of course. You get there, you're like, all right, how am I going to play this one? What club do you use?
This is where I get my hole in one.
What's the distance?
Hole. Right. Yes, Brady, what club he's using, and then you automatically increase it by three.
I've been using the same club as Brady recently.
Really?
Yeah.
If he goes sand wedge, I'm using like a seven or an eight.
All right, let's see. Which is better? That's the name of this game. You want another sports one, or you want to stay away from sports?
If it's music related, I'll
I don't have any music.
All right,
I got a weather question.
Oh,
110 degrees and dry for the day, or 85 and humid?
Man, I don't know if I've ever been in that kind of heat. 110 degrees.
Vegas,
maybe I was in Arizona.
Anything,
yeah. I'll take the 85 and humid. Yeah, last year I was in Arizona. It was just unbearable.
I love both, I will say.
But I'm going to go 110.
The nice thing about 85 and humid for me is that at the end of the day, there's a good chance of a thunderstorm.
I was just going to say, is there rain
involved? That's awesome. Yeah, you get that thunderstorm at the end of an 85-degree day, which is pretty awesome.
Kind of cools it off a little bit.
Yeah, and it's just the build-up to it. All of a sudden, it's like...
Black clouds rolling in.
Yeah, it looks like Armageddon.
As long as you're not on the golf course.
Right, then you got to get
Then you're
there.
Scared for your life.
That's true. Fair point.
I hate that.
All right, there you go. That is which is better. You like that, Tom?
Love that.
It's made for you.
Could we just do that all day?
I know. Wouldn't that be fun?
I mean, forget about this anthem nonsense.
Well, the thing is, that's basically what I do all day. That's what these guys are getting
this or that.
About. Yeah, I just kind of think which is better
all day.
Which
is better, yeah.
I just think about everything like that.
It's a slight variation on Answer the Question, Zerk.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because we get those kinds of questions.
A little bit, yes.
I like it.
But there you go. Which is better? Tom Wassel sitting in for Brock. We do have Brock, though. He's going to help us answer some questions for Blue 42. Talk a little football. We'll do it next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42!
Blue 42's enough.
All right, Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. Yes, Wassel in for Brock today as we continue on here with Coors Light's Blue 42. We do it every day at this time. It's three good football questions for Brock. And joining us to answer these football questions is Brock from his house before heading out on his little trip here. Hi, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Good morning, man. I'm doing great. Just awaiting the passengers here so we can roll on out of town.
Oh, so you're ready before everybody in your house. That's a huge surprise. I wouldn't have guessed that. All right, let's start here. Question number one. Doug Baldwin, great interview yesterday with Bob Gross and Tom, talking about everything from Pete Carroll to his departed teammates to what's going on in the country to the new anthem policy. If you had been a teammate of Doug Baldwin, what would you have thought of him?
You know, Mike, I've thought about that a bunch. I think I would have really enjoyed him. He reminds me in some ways of an old teammate I did have in Seattle, a linebacker by the name of Chad Brown. And Chad went to the University of Colorado and found a lot of success in the league. And then we signed him as a free agent. And he loved being in Seattle. He loved people. He loved the city. He loved a lot of the ideology. And I'm still friends with Chad. And we spent a lot of time, man, both in the locker room, on a lot of bus rides to and from practice, talking a lot of things. And most of it was outside of football. And I loved it. And sometimes there was a little bit of tension. You know, we did not come from the same backgrounds or set of core beliefs, but he enjoyed the discourse and so did I. And I think I would have really enjoyed it. Now, would Peyton have always enjoyed Doug? I don't know. I think there maybe they would have loved each other as football players, but I think there had been a time where Peyton would have said, "Hey, Doug," and would have said to a lot of these, former Seahawks guys, really, "Hey, can we get back to football? Can we just focus on football? Can we just be all about football?" And you know, there may have been a little healthier friction there, but I honestly would have loved him. I think most teammates that I ever shared a locker room did enjoy that kind of discourse, did enjoy the conversation, and as thoughtful and well reasoned as Doug is, sometimes those would have been conversations maybe like you and I have that I better be on my toes and be ready to go and rock and roll as we dig into topics.
Question number two. It's week one in Denver, Brock. First possession of the year. It's first and 10 from the 25. What play are you calling?
I'm running power, and I'm running right at Von Miller or the rookie Bradley Chubb on the other side. I am setting the tone, Tom Wassel, right from day one that this is going to be a different Seahawks team. It's not going to be a stretch play. I'm not going to count on guys getting a hat on a hat in an unbelievably loud stadium, Denver, one of the loudest in all the NFL. I'm not going to worry about people running through and getting hit in the backfield like we've seen on too many run plays, especially on the road. So I am running power where everybody knows what they're doing, where the right side of that line, Ed Dixon and crew, Jermaine Effetti are going to wash people down. They're going to have good angles to do so. I'm going to pull around with the backside guard. My tackle, Dwayne Brown, is going to cut off the action, and either Rashad Penny or Chris Carson is going to find a crease, and we are going to move people at the line of scrimmage. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind what the first play of the season is going to be.
What are you going to do on second and 12, though? That's the question. All right, question number three. Brock, for question three here, we're going to see actual practice today as the media is invited. When we look at the offense and the defense, where will some of those talent discrepancies be?
You know, the beauty of this camp is I don't think there's going to be any anywhere. Unlike years past where even Tom Wassel, who's out there watching recess, you know, it looks like recess to him. Even he could tell in the game, the tug of war at the line of scrimmage, the defensive line was throttling the offense. And it's part of the reason there was so much bickering and fights as offensive linemen, Jermaine Effetti and crew, have just got to hold on for dear life against Michael Bennett and Averill. And those guys get steamed and Frank Hart gets steamed and everything runs out of control. I think there's going to be, incredible competition because I don't think there's a huge talent discrepancy on that O-line and D-line like there's been in years past. I don't think there's a huge discrepancy with those corners versus the wide receivers or the tight ends versus the linebackers or the running backs versus the linebackers. I think there is a pretty darn level playing field in a lot of spots. And You know that that Pete Carroll is going to preach competition. He already has in those meeting rooms day after day, week after week, integrating the young guys into this ball club. But it'll be more legit than it's ever been, and especially at the line of scrimmage where it just has not been a competitive environment the last few years.
Brock, great stuff as always. Enjoy, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Brock.
You got it, guys.
All right, Brock Heward joining us today on the Venue Kings Hotline, and a special guest for his own segment, Coors Light's Blue 42. Tom Wassel, of course, in, hanging out today.
You're really going to run right at Von Miller on the first play?
Yeah, I think you can run at Von Miller, can't you? I mean, that's not his specialty in the game. He's more of a pass rusher than he is a run defender.
Salk asked the right question. What are you going to do on 2nd and 12 right after you run right in Von Miller?
Ye have little faith, my friend.
Should
They're
I have waited
fine.
And made that? All right, question number three, Brock. Now that it's 2nd and 12 or 13, now what are you going to run? So, no, I think they're going to be better, and I agree with them. I hope that's what they do. I hope they want to just line up, tell you what you're going to do, and then just go do it. I don't want to see play action. I don't right off the bat. I don't want to see Russell dropping back. I want to see them run the ball, and I want to see how effective they can be with a team that now has that back as its identity, at least in theory.
They will do that, but here's the thing. It's like the opening day question. Does it really matter on the first play?
Not
what
really,
they do?
But I think you're saying something.
You want
to
set a tone.
You're making a statement, and you're right. No, that one play doesn't matter overall. But I think you're sending a statement, and I think that's really what we're asking there. Who would you rather see, or who do you hope wins that running back job and is there behind Russell on the first play?
Penny.
Even though he's a rookie, and there's a good chance that he'll stick with Carson right off the bat.
The idea of a rookie running back needing time to sit. I mean, maybe some guys do, but that. It doesn't seem all that important. I don't want to rest everything on Chris Carson. I want him to be part of the equation, but what I saw from him last year wasn't enough to make me say, good, our running game is saved for the next 5 years.
Agreed. And by the way, if you got a chance to watch Penny at all, he can be really fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm excited about him.
He was awesome in college. I'm with you. I'm looking forward to that, and I hope he wins the job. All right, let's open this up to you guys a little bit. We did yesterday and had a really good spirited discussion on the future for the Mariners with Jerry DePoto and my belief that it's time to extend him. Well, let's trickle that down. How about Scott Servais? The Mariners win their 5th straight yesterday. They are 7-2 since Robbie Cano got hurt. Like DePoto, Servais finds himself at the end of a deal, a 3-year deal. He is not signed for next year. You ready to extend Scott Servais? I'll make you my argument. We'll hear from you guys at 206-421-3776. We'll do it next. I'm Brock and Salk.